wanna be in the quiet zone. Wanna be here on my own. Wanna see what I can do, but I don't know what I'd be. Many of us listening to this right now will find ourselves in a space of privilege. By virtue of where we call home, we are likely blessed with the ability to ponder the tactics we will use to confront systemic imbalances, if we choose to confront them at all. This is not so with members of frontline communities, who will be the focus of the following series of interviews. For them, state-sponsored industrial incursions upon their lands have removed the luxury of options. The first interview in this series is with Vanessa Gray from the First Nations community of Omgenong near Sarnia, Ontario. The community of about 850 residents is bordered by dozens of high-emission industrial neighbors in Canada's Chemical Valley at the southern tip of Lake Huron. Scientific studies have found high concentrations of contaminants in the soil and sediment of Omgenong Reserve land. Other studies have also concluded that in recent years there has been a sharp decrease in male childbirths, so that the ratio of male to female births is about 2-1. Gray was recently one of the keynote speakers at the PowerShift Atlantic conference that took place in Halifax on unceded Mi'kmaq territory. For more information on this frontline Southern Ontario struggle, you can follow Omgenong and Sarnia Against Pipelines, or ASAP, on Facebook and Twitter. For the Halifax Media Co-op, I'm Miles Howe.
So my community is on the front line of many different chemical refineries. There's 63 high-emitting facilities within the 50-kilometer radius. And so what that means is we are sharing a fence line with companies such as Suncor and Shell, Enbridge, Imperial Oil, Esso, Nova Chemicals. All of these oil companies are huge and they're national, and they each have their own refining facilities, facilities and pipelines, and all of these are right next to our community. They call us neighbors in releases to the media, because we are neighbors. We are living right next to them, and this affects our health, the health of the water, air, land, and of the people who live in Omgenong.
Can you talk about how the presence of these companies has affected your community's ability to interact with the environment around it? What is the landscape like?
So with all these facilities and different projects that are so close to us, there are a lot of releases and spills, which we are notified sometimes when they happen, sometimes not. Sometimes we can just smell something really strong in the air. Sometimes it's hard to breathe. Sometimes you taste something in your mouth and you know that there is something released into the air. But when we are notified, there's an alarm that sounds, and so we are unaware of what chemical is in the air. And sometimes it can be extremely toxic, and so we just don't know until we are notified by the local radio station. And so this has impacted our water, where we cannot fish. I have grown up and been told not to touch the water because it's poisoned. And so I grow up just knowing not to touch the water. And now we have signs in our community that say, this water is toxic, don't touch it. But unfortunately for the animals, they can't read. There are animals with cancers on our land, and then our soil is then contaminated also. It's overall an unhealthy and an acceptable space for living beings to be.
What about the health effects to residents of your community?
So firsthand, I know the impact it has on our respiratory system, where children I went to daycare with all had asthma, and they all required puffers. Children and adults still suffer with the ability to breathe and then rely on puffers in order to get through the day. So that was something my brother all three of us, my brother, my sister, and myself, have dealt with growing up, struggling for air to breathe. I remember we were lining up, like, in the kitchen when it was time to take the puffer, and so there was the three of us, and my mom would give us the puffer each, and then we would be off, and then we can go. I remember when my friends would visit me, and I was a little embarrassed because I knew that it wasn't right or it was weird, but it was just my reality again. And other effects are also very severe, where we are losing community members and animals to cancer. There is a high cancer rate in our community. Men don't usually live over the age of 50. And then we have miscarriages. We have a skewed sex ratio where there are more boys than girls being born in our community. And we have, the 39% on average women experiencing stillbirths or miscarriages.
From an outsider's perspective, perhaps it raises the question, why not attempt to relocate from an area that through no fault of your own has been rendered dangerous to live in?
The idea of picking up and relocating is something that honestly my people were used to. My ancestors moved around our territory, and the indigenous people are not these extreme, like, peaceful beings or anything. We are also human. Historically, we used to move around in our own territory, and there used to be wars between the Ojibwe and different nations. But nowadays, our territory, our traditional territory, is huge compared to our reserve that we're left with. And our reserve is very, very small. So if we were to pick up and relocate, we can't. And therefore, we are tied to this land. We have a responsibility to the land. We are not the colonial types of people to pick up and move somebody else from where they live. This is our land, and I will go down with this land before I'm asked to move.
It's a big question, but how do we begin bridging gaps potentially between Indigenous and non-Indigenous communities? Population-wise, of course, through colonialism and the genocide that accompanied that, right now we're dealing with Indigenous communities being a minority group. What kind of help, if any, is needed from outside your community to highlight these issues and then attempt to remedy them?
We are in a time of resistance that was maybe on a standstill from the 60s and 70s from the Indigenous movement back then, but now we are trying to pick that up as a new generation, and we need to be armed with knowledge, and we need to have courage with us. And this is speaking not only to Indigenous people but to all people who are privileged enough to have a home where they don't live in fear, and they have a family that is not in constant danger. People need to understand that there's privilege, and it's not a bad thing, but people need to use it to a greater cause by speaking up and sharing this knowledge, because the power is within all of us. It's not behind the doors of Parliament. It's within the people sitting around your dinner table and the people turning on the TV and making the choices that they do to invest and spend money where they decide to. And they're going to continue to do it unless they are decolonized. And people need to decolonize themselves before we decolonize the society. And that's what will do it. And people are now beginning that higher consciousness of understanding that this is a colonial state, and communities will end up like Omgenong if they don't say no and don't speak up now.
Thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you.